Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Welcome to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, making sense of your money, one money talk at a time. Let's get talking. Welcome, Money Buddies, to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming, and this week we're talking with Cody Garrett, and I am very excited for this interview. You've likely heard of Cody on Choose FI and some of his great tips around tax gain harvesting, which, by the way, is an awesome idea. So if you have any questions about that, let me know. It's something that I've done and that my wife and I have benefited from. So make sure to start a conversation around any sort of great ideas you hear from this episode. But this is going to be a great episode. We're going to talk all about community and learning about money together. I have some great questions lined up, all the way from what to do if an awkward conversation comes up in your family around money, all the way to teaching others about money when you feel like you finally have a good grasp on it. There is a lot in between those two points, from joining online groups, how to get the uncomfortableness out of posting online and making yourself vulnerable. And I know that each and every one of you is going to take something away from this. What's something that you've struggled with when it comes to talking about money? Do you struggle to bring up hard questions? Do you struggle to help others learn in a way that's effective? No matter what, I am sure and confident you're going to be able to take away something great from this conversation. Quick update on the show. I'm going to be moving to a temporary bi-weekly format starting in May for the summer. This is so I can prepare for the CFP exam. So I'm really excited to take that, but there will be a brief period during the summer where the show is going to be bi-weekly, and I have some great interviews lined up for you. Also, some awesome changes are coming down the pipeline. I've been teasing these out, so stay tuned for the beginning of May and make sure to subscribe here and on social media. I'm starting to do more on LinkedIn, so if you want to join me over there, give me a search on LinkedIn and you'll easily find me. But today's money buddy is Cody Garrett. Cody Garrett is a certified financial planner and an educator passionate about transforming the perception of financial planning by promoting core values of generosity and transparency. As the founder of Measure Twice Planners, he leads an educational community where new and experienced financial advisors enhance their expertise and confidence through practical application and collaborative learning. Cody is also the creator of Measure Twice Money, an educational platform dedicated to demystifying financial planning and showing the public what it looks like and feels like in real life. The money talking points for this week are: how can we avoid an echo chamber about money? 2, how can you dip your toes into talking about money? And 3, who can you teach about money to help you learn it twice? With the money talking points in mind, let's get talking and welcome Cody Garrett to the show. Welcome to today's interview on Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. Joining me today, I have Cody Garrett, and I'm excited for this interview. I've heard Cody on a couple different podcasts. You've likely heard him on Choose FI if you listen to that podcast, but I'm excited to finally have him on my show. And I always kind of joke around that a podcast is kind of a selfish endeavor to be able to talk to the people you want to about money. So it's really fun. We're going to talk today about talking about money, so I'm excited to get into this. But Cody, could you introduce yourself for everyone?
Sure, absolutely. Cody Garrett. I live down in Texas. Yeehaw. I grew up in Texas in a family of engineers. Even though I grew up in a family of NASA engineers, I was the only person who veered away from engineering and actually went into music. I got a music degree, ironically, in music theory, which is a science or engineering of music. I was a keyboardist, music director, and arranger for 10 years from about 2008 to 2018. Then I became kind of overnight career changer into financial planning. So I've been in financial planning since 2018. Super excited about not just serving clients one-on-one, but also serving people one-to-many, where we talk a lot about community today. So I'm really passionate about, you know, I define kindness as giving to others without expecting something in return. And I think that's a big part of my focus on education and community. I'm always trying to help other people. Even if I don't benefit directly from it, I know it's the right thing to do. And I know that in the long run, it all works out. So I'm excited to be here and talk about wherever you want to go next.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And it's always fun, like you said, giving back and just having these conversations, because even if a couple of people listen to it and they're able to take something away to change their financial future, that's a big deal, because then they go and teach someone else. But now that you mentioned your music background as well, you need to start writing music about financial planning. You need to start writing like catchy jingles.
We're in the money. There's an old one, right? Yeah.
You need to start writing like jingles to help CFPs learn all the different
stuff. Oh, that'd be so good. That'd be so good. Or little raps.
Let's go ahead and kick it off here just by talking about how it can be beneficial to talk about money. You and I both know this. We create content, things like that. But why is it important for everyone really to be talking about money?
So if you think about, some people call it the wheel of life. It's kind of like every aspect of your life. We have our physical health, our mental health. Mental health still has a lot of stigma to it. People are getting around being comfortable and more vulnerable about mental health. There's also spiritual practice, which again, that's something that you, some people don't feel comfortable talking about. Some people love talking about it. It just, there's a big spectrum there. Also relational. That's a huge part. We're talking today, right? Building relationships. Mm-hmm. I'm really passionate about building relationships, not just transactions. Really building a collaborative relationship with people, not just a, you know, somebody pays me and I tell them what to do type of relationship. Mm-hmm. We have physical, mental, spiritual, relational, and financial, finally, financial wellness. Yeah. And everybody knows that finances is important. It touches every part of your life. I always say that, you know, every movement of money involves a consequence or an opportunity cost. Mm. The big thing about the importance of talking about money is that money is a magnifier. Sometimes we have these limited beliefs about what having money means and what not having a lot of money means. But I believe that money is a magnifying glass. It has the potential to make you more of who you already are. The more wealth you have, the more opportunity to be what you already are. For example, somebody who's selfish could become even more selfish. People who are hoarding everything for themselves can have more to hoard. Mm. On the flip side, somebody who's generous now has the opportunity to be even more generous. Understanding that money is a magnifier and that it's not a good or a bad thing. It's just a tool. Even though people say it's just a tool, it's not just a tool because it has power. How does money play into your physical health, your mental health, your spiritual practice, your relationships, right? So if you think about physical health, people talking about a gym membership or hiring somebody to help with their physical health, the ability to afford therapy, right? Spiritual practice, a lot of people really care about giving to others financially, not just with their time and energy, but tithing, for example, is a way to give back. Also buying resources, buying books about spiritual practice, building relationships. Mm-hmm. I think about money as the whole purpose of financial planning is not to fit your life into your money. It's to fit your money into your life. You really have to define, like, you know, what are my unique values and desired outcomes across all those, you know, the physical, mental, spiritual, relational, and then how can I fit my money into that? Whether you have a little bit of money or a lot of money, you still have to be intentional about it. I've met people who have tens of millions of dollars in net worth, even liquid net worth, who are not intentional about aligning their use of capital, time, money, energy, and attention with what actually matters to you. So I think that talking about money just kind of makes us evaluate how money is fitting into our lives. The more you talk about money, the more you realize there's no one-size-fits-all approach to personal finance. I literally have a trademark called Keep Finance Personal, which is sometimes we talk about personal finance, but we just tell people what to do based on what we would do rather than understanding that it's a truly personal topic.
Yeah, I had an episode several months ago with Dana Miranda about, she talked about you don't need a budget. And that's kind of her whole big selling point. And I've had her on twice and I love having her on because she challenges my ideas. I came from the Ramsey background, which is very blanket, like here's the route to go. And then like you said, as we keep talking about it more, you try out other creators, you try out other podcasts and things like that. You learn there's so many different ways to do it. If we're not talking about that, maybe you get stuck in your one way and maybe it's good, or maybe you get stuck in a bad way that maybe your grandparents or parents were really bad with money, but you don't ask anyone about it. So you don't hear any other ideas. How do you think it's beneficial to do it as a group or as a community and avoid isolation with our money?
Yeah. So you've heard the term blind spot, and they call it a blind spot because you don't know they exist. And you know, a lot of people think that I have it all together financially as a financial planner. But as soon as I share my financial information with other people, when I do that, people immediately see blind spots that I have. So everybody understands the idea of driving and somebody's in your blind spot, right? Mm-hmm. We all have not just missed financial opportunities, but we have limited beliefs about what money can and cannot do. So I think blind spots is a big part of, you know, getting yourself out of isolation. It's just like, you know, we all have those. Some people just have a normal mirror where you can just like see broadly, right? Other people, you can, they might have like that little mirror, right? That's on the mirror. Or like they might even have some mirrors, even have like a little red light on them when there's somebody in your blind spot. So it's like, it's really important to surround yourself with others that can be that blind spot, but with empathy, with, you know, compassion, right? So non-judgment. Mm-hmm. Some of the best knowledge I've gained about money is not just somebody teaching me. It's somebody saying, hey, I think there's this one resource that you might want to check out. You don't have to be the expert to help with money. You can simply become a library of resources so that when people come to you, you have that light bulb moment of like, oh, I remember learning something about that. And I'm going to point them to a resource without expecting something in return, just simply to help them.
Yeah, you can be the person that has the library of books that you just have a few key points on each one and you just send them to the book instead of having to try to teach them about every single piece.
Right.
You know where to send them. To take your car reference even a little bit further, some cars have like sensors and cameras on them mm-hmm. that when you put on your signal, the dashboard lights up with a camera that views that blind spot. And that can be that team mm-hmm. around you that you right. have that one person that when that signal is triggered, they're looking in that specific blind spot. So I like yeah. that analogy of all these different sensors and cameras and mirrors yeah. that we have around us. That's fantastic. And I think that goes to why you need to surround yourself and actually talk to people about mm-hmm. anything, let alone money. Like you said, the physical, spiritual, all those different areas in our lives. If you have someone that speaks to it about, hey, here's a blind spot in your mental health. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing goes with money.
Right.
Where you can say, here's a blind spot in your money. So I really like that. Make sure you're avoiding doing things on your own, but also it can be a little bit challenging. It might not go well. It may go well. Mm. Can you share to encourage or motivate people an experience of where maybe you talked about money and it went well so that they don't feel so scared to do it?
Yeah. So first of all, growing up, my family didn't really talk about money. Keep in mind that if your family doesn't talk about money, you're learning through actions. People talk about like, I don't want to tell my kids about our financial situation. Like they're going to see it. Like just because you don't talk about it doesn't mean you're not going to see it. In terms of growing up, we didn't really talk about it. But, you know, in terms of money going well now, kind of ironically with monies, we didn't talk about it growing up. But now I'm actually helping my own family members, my own parents and aunt and uncle prepare for retirement. And one of those things where it's funny how people are always discussing who should teach you about money. Some say the public education system should teach you about money. Some people have said, you know, it's your parents' responsibility. You know, I didn't learn about money in the household. I expanded my community beyond the home. So, you know, by truly going out and learning from others, it's funny. Now I'm at an opportunity where I went out and learned about money and now I can come back mm-hmm. into my household and teach my own family on the path literally to and through retirement. As we're discussing this conversation today, there's a lot of fear and uncertainty happening in the market and politically. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's another reason not to be in isolation. People aren't truly in isolation. They're just in this echo chamber of finding resources that are just mirroring what they already feel. So I like to surround myself with people who are feeling differently than me, not just the same as me.
Yeah, and especially in all those different areas. If someone has identified a blind spot, that's a great chance to get that person or someone else in your life that knows that area, because then you don't have to stress so much about it. One of the things I shared recently, I even shared this on LinkedIn to help people realize that us content creators aren't perfect. Like my wife and I don't have our will set up yet, or we don't have any sort of stuff in that area. That's a blind spot that someone spoke to a couple weeks ago that I was like, oh shoot, let me write down something so that I can work on that in a few weeks. But I don't know all about that yet. Mm. But there are people out there that I can go talk to and ask questions about that area instead of having to worry about learning every single piece of it.
Right.
That's a fantastic piece of advice there. Go out, learn it, and then bring it back to your group, because maybe you have a friend group that doesn't know about it either. Me and my friends were all similar ages, similar life stages. I worry as I'm learning about some of this stuff about my friends that have kids, like, do they have guardians chosen? Do they have all that set up? So then you can bring that back and help teach them, because bringing community into it and building your own community is super helpful about learning and teaching about money. But real quick, I also want to share how to navigate bad financial conversations. Mm. What do you do if someone brings up something in the blue that's uncomfortable? Maybe they're asking you, how much credit card debt do you have? But you know, they're going to make fun of you for it. How do you handle uncomfortable money conversations?
Yeah, I think in general, money conversations, the best characteristic to have around money is what I call genuine curiosity. And what I mean by that is really providing personalized follow-up questions. I think the most powerful questions we can ask are actually the follow-up questions. It's like the second and third layer. For example, if somebody came to me and asked me about my own finances, you might respond with kindness. Maybe ask them a follow-up question to that. I also think that the best questions to ask are questions that only make sense to that specific person. I found that a lot of people, when they talk about money or ask questions about money, they ask very general questions because they might have a general audience. But I find that if you're genuinely curious, if you just ask about them, right, you might see this thing. It's like, you know, people over profit, right? I always say when you're hiring a financial advisor, a financial planner, only hire somebody who asks about your family before they ask about your finances. Mm-hmm. If somebody were to come to me and ask a question, I would create space to learn more about them as a person. And then as we talked about, like, you know, fit their money into even the money conversation into their life conversation, leading with that genuine curiosity really helps. But also there's a discomfort in people asking you questions you don't know the answer to. And I think that imposter syndrome, right? That feeling of like, oh my gosh, they asked me a question, especially if you're in a place of expertise where you feel like I should know the answer to this. The best way to get out of that feeling is to just ask them a question. And again, not as a manipulative technique, but simply with a genuine curiosity. So I just find that anytime you feel uncomfortable in money conversations or somebody brings something up to you out of the blue, take a breath and ask something uniquely personal about them. And then what I like about that, it's called motivational interviewing. There's a, you know, kind of a side of psychology that, you know, the more you ask questions to other people, somebody might come to me for advice and I ask them a follow-up question. And by them being asked a question they've never asked themselves before, their response to that question is often the advice I would give them. So if you can get people to come up with their own advice and then just kind of confirm that, they're a lot less likely not just to accept that advice, but also implement it because it feels like they came up with the idea, not me.
Yeah, that's a great technique my wife has used in the medical field, is help like ask them questions that lead them to the answer. That way they're more comfortable with it. So that's a fantastic tip, especially if you have one of your friends or family members is in a tough financial situation, but you don't want to be the person that comes in and says, here's what you need to do. Instead, you can ask questions like, did you know you can avoid credit card interest? And then that brings up their curiosity too, of like, how do I do that? Because honestly, the numbers don't matter as much as you think, right? As much as you want to text your friends, what's your guys' net worth? It's a like pointless conversation. It doesn't really matter. It's not going to get you anywhere good, but sharing those general principles and techniques are going to be beneficial. So I love that point of coming at it with that curiosity, but let's move to talking about community. This is a big part of what both of us do. And both of us have separate communities. Every podcast has a separate community. There's so many all over the place. How do you even bother choosing one, or why do you even bother joining one in the first place when there's already so many you feel like you have to be a part of?
Yeah, I think that sometimes people feel pressure to be a part of a community where you're like, I'm not going to join this community. It's kind of like joining a tribe. Like everybody in the tribe has their skills. First of all, like join a community where you can be a passive observer first. Anytime I found a new group, you're not going to know if it's the right group for you immediately. Like something that takes time. Creating content and consuming content both takes time and you have to be patient. So, you know, in terms of knowing which ones to join or considering joining communities, keep in mind that the whole purpose of this is to not kind of turn off the idea of like joining a group to get personalized advice. The reason I join a group is for education, support, and encouragement. I'm not going there for personalized advice, especially not any rules or judgment-based advice. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. We think about community, this one-on-one versus one-to-many community is an opportunity to learn from lots of different people. Whereas, as you know, there's a lot of financial influencers, usually net positive. You know, there's a lot of podcasts out there that's just one person spilling what they think, like their personal opinions as fact, potentially. So when you're joining a community, make sure that if it is truly a community, like there shouldn't just be one person who's making the post and everybody else is kind of bowing to that. Or again,
otherwise, like, that's just a Facebook page or something.
Exactly. That's a really good point. When you join a community, is this a page or is this truly a group? If you're a passive observer and simply sit peacefully in the community and just observe the questions, observe the answers before you even engage, I think you're going to just develop like, are these the types of people I want to surround myself with? You might've heard that those phrases of like, you're the average of the five people you spend your time with. These don't necessarily need to be the same people you invite to dinner, but just say, hey, are these the types of people who make me feel like after I leave, like if I go to this group and then leave this group, do I feel like I have more energy or less energy when I leave the group? Have you ever had those people where they call you and you look at your caller ID and as soon as you see their name on your phone, your eyes roll to the back of your head, right?
Yeah. Or you even need a Teams message at work. As soon as you see that pop up, you're like, oh no.
Exactly. So there's two sides of that. One is, do you need to change your automatic negative thoughts or change your community? If you go into a community where you feel like your eyes are rolling in the back of your head, or like you're just immediately getting defensive anytime somebody asks a question or gives an answer, it's either something you need to work on personally, or most likely it's a toxic community that you probably shouldn't be a part of.
Sounds like you just painted a good lens for us to consider all of our social media usage through. Like, are you following a page that is toxic, or do you need to move on to that? So some actual good criteria to consider these groups and consider what you're consuming on social media can be really beneficial. That's fantastic advice. And if the group doesn't work out, leave it and try to join a different one. So now you have a little bit of a framework to decide what groups to join. Do these groups, are they actually helpful? You mentioned don't go for personal advice, go for education. Mm. Are they actually helpful with your money, or do you need to realize they won't be helpful and just join them anyways?
Yeah, again, being that passive observer, observe the difference between education, right, which is people providing general rules of thumb, general resources, versus advice, which is personal recommendations. One perfect example of this is I'm one of the moderators in a Facebook group called Retirement Planning Education, where there's 60,000 people on the path to and through retirement. that people on the path to retirement ask this question, should I contribute to a traditional 401k or a Roth 401k? Without going too deep in the technical, they're effectively saying, should I contribute pre-tax or after-tax based on what I think about future tax rates and all these things? But what you find is most of the comments, most of the answers to that question within the group are traditional, Roth, traditional, pre-tax, Roth. Like, it's just people saying what they would do based on their situation. What I find in the most helpful communities, rather than, again, that's advice. When people are telling you what to do, I always say, in the financial planning world, we have this term called fiduciary, which is acting in somebody's best interest. To give advice in somebody's best interest, you first have to understand their interests. And what I find is there's two parts to it. One is that when you ask the question, should I contribute to traditional 401k or Roth 401k? Some people just tell you what they would do. That's the one fault. The second is the person who asked the question didn't provide enough personalized information to actually receive advice. So if you're truly asking for advice, make sure that they actually understand enough about you to provide that advice. I think it's better rather than saying, should I do this? Say, are there any general frameworks for deciding between contributing to traditional versus Roth? And that way, none of the answers are going to say, always choose. And another part of this idea of, is it helpful, is if you agree with 100% of what's said within a community, it's not the right community, because that you just surrounded yourselves with people and in this echo chamber that are just going to kind of mirror the other person's thoughts. Every community has its niche. You have this common bond with people, but be careful that common bond doesn't create like a common, you're just like that every conversation is just people kind of saying what you want to hear versus what you need to hear. Part of being helpful in a community is telling people things they might not want to hear, providing resources that they might not know about.
Yeah, I love that. And it's like you said, two sides of the coin. Either they're not providing enough information or people are just saying what they want to do. That's not really helpful. If the group is just yes or no questions, then maybe the group isn't the right place. And that's where being that passive observer can be helpful. But maybe going into these groups and saying, here's my entire situation, it can seem really scary, but that can also be a great way to get useful advice. But I also like asking for frameworks, because these frameworks, and one thing I learned from you in one of the courses you do, is that assumptions are always wrong. The numbers are always going to change. So you're going to put out these ideas and people are going to give you all these tips. Just going in the right direction is going to be a whole lot more helpful. You say, hey, should I contribute to an HSA or an IRA or my 401k? What kind of framework do you guys look at? People can mention, oh, the company match is a good place to start. And instead of saying, here's exactly what you should do, they can help point you in the right direction. That can be a whole lot more useful than trying to get super specific with it, because then you can go educate yourself or you can connect with people. And honestly, most of the people, especially like podcasters or people running these communities, love to jump on calls, or they love to help people. They'll answer emails, answer questions. So reach out if you need that more specific advice after you learn about the framework. Don't start with super specific things is kind of what I'm taking away with that. But if you do get to that point, it can be really scary and it can be hard to be vulnerable. So let's say someone, they have it all typed up, they're ready to post, but they're nervous. How do you get over that vulnerability of actually asking for help in these 50, 60,000 person groups?
Yeah, a few parts. First is the realization that nobody is an expert on everything. Just like you don't know something in the group, somebody else in the group knows something that you know, whether it's about money or other things. I always say, if somebody feels like they know it all, walk into a library. The more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. So I think a part of that's actually just simply humility, that if you feel vulnerable asking for help, maybe you feel like you should be an expert right now. And maybe you need that humility to say, hey, like, I'm actually here to learn, not just do. But you hear these people who, let's say somebody's talking and you're not really listening to them, you're just waiting to respond. That often happens in these groups too, where people ask a question more as a way to tell people their ideas. It's more of that confirmation, or that you're talking about validation more than actually simply like truly asking a question. Another is in terms of vulnerability. This is a really fun one for me. Engage with other people's questions in a way that you'd want them to engage with yours. If you go into a community and the first time you engage is by asking a vulnerable question, that's scary. But if you spend 3 months in a community engaging with other people's questions in a thoughtful, kind way, with generosity and gratitude, by the time you have a question, you're going to feel a lot more comfortable asking that question, because you know there's people in the group that, you know, kind of know, not necessarily your situation, but they know how you come across. They should meet you in the same way. Again, we hear like the golden rule, like treat others the way that you'd want to be treated. That's a way to reduce the scariness of being vulnerable, is by help other people in the groups to start. Again, maybe there's three parts. First is being a passive observer. The second is engaging on other people's questions in a kind and generous way. And then the third is then you'll feel comfortable asking your questions. So don't jump right in. Don't jump right into the deep end. Play around in the kiddie pool for a minute. Sit on the chair and watch other people swimming if you're learning how to swim. The second is getting into the shallow end with others, engaging with others. And before diving off the diving board, feeling, you know, where it's scary and the big a big splash. And the last one here is kind of what we talked about earlier, is asking for the right types of help. So if you are going to ask a question, if you want a specific answer, ensure that you have specific details in your question. Otherwise, I've seen this all the time where people ask for advice without specifics. And then all the comments are somewhat rude, saying, like, why do you, like, you shouldn't expect good answers if you're not giving, like, there's not enough information. Vulnerability is simply saying, how can I do this in a way where I feel like I already trust the people in this community first before asking the question?
Yeah. And you used a similar framework that I've taught people before, like when they're scared to bring up that money conversation, like if you're scared to bring it up to a family or friend, one of the things that I've mentioned to try out is maybe ask a question that's not your exact situation, just to learn how they respond to you about money.
I have a friend with this question.
Asking for a friend, then you ask your specific thing. Now, like if you, maybe you saw a fun post on Reddit or Facebook that is someone else's situation that you could have a quick discussion about. You could learn if your friend or family member is super judgmental about money and you don't want to ask them any more questions. Or maybe you learn that they are deep into financial stuff and they know everything, or at least it seems like it. Then you know that they're a good person to ask questions about. So it's the same sort of framework of tiptoe into it. Don't just go straight to the pool and jump off the deepest, tallest diving board, because you're probably going to get hurt or people aren't going to answer the question.
Or they're all going to look like you, like, who is that? Who's that person? What's up with them?
Your form is off. You're going to get that new member tag at the top.
You're going to go in with a belly flop rather than a pencil, whatever you meant to do.
So be careful, tiptoe into it and try out the different sections. That's a fantastic way for people to get started in these groups that can tend to be overwhelming and maybe a little bit scary at first. But let's say you're now moving into the person that you know about money. You've spent maybe years learning about it. You've took a couple different courses and maybe you're ready to teach your family, your friends, or others around you. Like, this is something that I do. I'll set up presentations at the library to get a couple people there, and then I can teach them about what I know, answer their questions. And those are really fun. But when you get to that point, it can be really awesome. What kind of value do you see in teaching people in group settings?
Yeah, I find that the phrase I use is, when you teach, you learn twice. So I find that, imagine if somebody were to tell you, hey, you're going to make a presentation at the library next week on this topic. Your first step isn't, going to the library to do the presentation. The first step is making sure you tighten your own knowledge first. So I find that the value of teaching others doesn't start with the teaching. It's the preparation for the teaching. Mm-hmm. So again, if you're an opportunity to teach, I think that imposter syndrome that people feel of, like, oh my gosh, I'm not good enough to make this presentation. That's actually really helpful, because I say that imposter syndrome shows up when you become a humble expert, right? You're in a place of expertise where people are coming to the library to hear you speak. You're in a place of expertise within the group, but also there's a humility about it, where the reason you feel this tension is because this is important, right? I always say imposter syndrome is only showing up because you're doing something worth doing, something important. So the value of teaching other people is actually kind of tightening your own screws. I say that clarity precedes confidence. A lot of people really want to be confident about money and even their confidence to teach, but you really need that clarity first. Keep in mind, you have to understand, as I tell clients in financial planning, I always say we have to understand where we are before determining where to go and how to get there. That works with financial education, financial advice, but it also works with teaching. That before you feel confident to teach others, you're going to do the work to truly gain clarity on the topic that you're teaching and tighten your own screws of knowledge before you go out, even before setting up that presentation at the library.
Yeah, and I think people probably underestimate the amount of time, podcasters, YouTubers, these simple little library presentations, the amount of time that goes into actually learning that stuff is way more than the time that you actually sit listening to it. I like that you get to learn twice. So teaching it to others is a great way to solidify your knowledge and make sure you actually know what you're talking about. And then they're going to ask you a question that you have no clue, and it's going to make you feel silly, and you're going to go learn about that, and then you can come back to it. So I think that's kind of a fun point to get to, that you're able to teach others and help others. It's a really awesome place to get to. Just real quick, we got a couple questions here, but we're racing towards the finish line. This has been super fun, Cody. So thanks for coming. If people want to get started with these communities, maybe what are just some quick hit tips of how they can get started with helping others?
Yeah. So as I mentioned before, be an engaged member of the community first, rather than trying to be the expert. Provide encouragement, even if you don't know the answer. One way you can get started in the community is, let's say people are asking these questions you don't know the answer to yet. You can simply say, wow, that's such a great question. Thank you for asking that. This is giving me more ideas about my own personal situation. So if somebody asks a question, you don't have to say, oh man, I don't know the answer to that. You can simply say that. Wow, that was a fantastic question. You've made me think more about this. And hopefully I can find my own resources and share them with you in the future. Mm-hmm. Right. So again, be encouraging, not just an advisor in the group. Yeah. Lastly, point to other trusted resources, not just your own. One of the best things I can do in a group, especially if you're in an online group, is to tag other people. Mm-hmm. So somebody asks a question you don't know the answer to, but you're like, I'm pretty sure this other person in the community I've been observing is an expert. You can simply say, hey, great question. I think at blah, 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 mm-hmm. might have some helpful resources. And I think that one of the most fulfilling ways to help people is to point to somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. It's that public gratitude. We all have these basic desires, right? To be, you know, chosen, included, right? Mm-hmm. Heard and understood. It feels really good to give that public awareness to somebody else. And it also mm-hmm. takes the pressure off of us when we can just point to, hey, check out this other person. Yeah. So it's a way to help people with actually like kind of reducing your own anxiety simultaneously.
Yeah, it's a way to add a third person into the enjoyment of helping each other. The person gets their answer. Someone else gets the recognition of someone saying, hey, I think this person's more of an expert, because that's fun when people turn to you for advice. But then mm-hmm. you also get the enjoyment of being able to help and connect someone. At the library presentation, someone asked me a really random question about their retirement account statement that I didn't quite know the term. And mm-hmm. I was like, you know, the company that runs the 401k, they will know.
Let's call them. So, yeah.
Yeah. Let's go in that direction. Cause it was just some random term. I was like, I can't believe I've never heard mm-hmm. of that one, but I think they made it up. As we're heading towards the finish here, Cody, there's two final questions I like to ask everyone. Mm-hmm. First will be, how can people find you online or connect with you? And then the last one is, what's one thing you wish you knew about community when you were in your early 20s or sooner as people are getting started with their money?
Yeah, great questions all around. There are only a few podcasters who I felt were truly prepared for the conversation, and you're at the top of the list. So oh, I really appreciate you. So the first one, finding me online, is Measure Twice Money. That's actually a YouTube channel as well. I share a free educational video course on how to create a financial plan. I don't have the capacity to serve everybody one-on-one with financial planning or even personalized education, but here's a 5-hour video course sharing my entire process that you might be able to do with, including with your own family. So the Measure Twice Money YouTube channel, there's a playlist on the YouTube channel where you can actually watch real financial planning meetings, real client meetings with real people, real numbers, real conversations. It's always fun to watch other people have deeper financial conversations and maybe get a glimpse on you know, what it's like to ask a deeper follow-up question of me mm-hmm. doing that with real life people in real life. So the other place to find me, certainly LinkedIn, X. And then lastly, as I mentioned, the Retirement Planning Education Facebook group. I'm sure you might be able to link some of these things, or just Google Measure Twice Cody on Google and find all those resources. The second question, very thoughtful. What's one thing you wish you knew about community when you were in your early 20s? Keep in mind, if you're thinking about money right now, I didn't know what an IRA was when I was 30 years old. Right? When I was 30, I didn't know the stuff you're learning right now in school and teaching to others. I didn't even start that journey until I was 30. So I felt like I was catching up between 20 and 30. I didn't really learn about finances. The thing that I wish I knew, first of all, your tribe is out there. Just keep in mind that there are so many groups. It's not like there's mm-hmm. one group and you either do or do not belong. Your tribe is out there. You just have to go searching for it. And it's easier than ever to search using not just Google, AI, ChatGPT, and so forth. The second is, you can go beyond listening to individual influencers. Mm-hmm. I wish that I knew in my 20s that it wasn't just finding that one person to listen to and read all their books, listen to all their podcasts, mm-hmm. but really go beyond individuals and really focus on that there's groups. You can actually learn from a community, not just individuals. And the last thing here is that, as I mentioned before, I wish I knew back then that you're going to make a mistake if you try to find even one person or a group that you feel like you agree with 100% of what they say, right? Mm-hmm. So that echo chamber thing is real. I think the confirmation bias is something we all struggle with. It's one of our blind spots. You know, if you're anti-debt and you mm-hmm. only listen to influencers who are anti-debt, guess what? You're not going to learn about how to leverage debt and maybe responsible mm-hmm. ways, quantitative, qualitative. I always say that my job as a financial educator is to provide personalized financial education to make others make their own well-informed mm-hmm. decisions. It is to provide enough resources where they have the clarity and confidence to make their own decision. And again, at that point, feel confident that they can actually implement it. There's a difference between education and literacy, right? In mm-hmm. financial space, there's a difference between knowing something and knowing how it applies to your life. So mm-hmm. I feel like that's something about community I wish I knew, was that, especially in the financial space, it's not just about learning all the different topics. It's getting to a point where you understand them well enough to put your money into your life. So yeah, I just wish in my 20s, I would have been more open to other opinions, understanding there's opportunity cost to every financial decision, and that there are people that think differently from you that are worth spending your time with. like you.
That's what's so fun about these interviews. I get to bring on people who don't like budgeting. I get to bring on people who don't like debt, people who use debt like crazy and leverage everything. And like, there's all these different ways to, like you said, plug money into our life and make it a tool and make it useful for us. But Cody, this whole episode has been jam-packed with great knowledge tips. There's a bunch of different sections that I'm sure people are going to take away from, but thank you for coming on. This has been fantastic.
Oh, I really appreciate you inviting me. I'm so glad we were able to talk about money into your life. My wife, Marissa, and I are in the middle of an adoption process, right? And you know, there's financial parts of adoption, but there's also a lot of qualitative fear and anxiety and uncertainty and imposter syndrome. Like anybody who's listening who either has kids or wants to have kids in the future, if you wait until you know it all to start having kids, you're never going to have kids.
You're never going to have them. Yeah.
Right. So same thing with financial, right? Yeah. If you wait until you know everything about money to start doing money, right, in a healthy way, you're never going to start. So just, again, dip your toe in the water, I guess is the theme of today's conversation.
Get swimming. Okay. We'll leave it on that mic drop. Thanks, Cody. Thank you so much to Cody for coming on the show. If you thought that was a great interview, let me know, reach out, email me, or leave a comment on social media. But let's get into the money talking points today. The first one is, how can we avoid an echo chamber with money? This is something that I have struggled with in the past with my podcast. It can be so easy to talk to the same people about all the same things, but it is important to challenge our beliefs and mindset. A perfect example of this is the episodes where I've had Dana Miranda on to talk about budgeting, because her thoughts are that we don't need a budget. You've heard me on plenty of episodes talk about how we do need a budget. So having people on like that, or talking to people in our lives that can challenge our views on money, can be fantastic and can be really helpful, because it can help you shore up why you're doing something a certain way. So consider taking the other side of the conversation and try to reason it out and have a legitimate conversation around it. Let's say you really love to do credit card hacking, but your friend pushes back about it. Well, don't be mean. Have an honest conversation and talk about why it may or may not be good. This is a conversation that I've gone back and forth on both sides. When I started out, I was saying to my wife, let's just do debit cards. Then we went in a little bit to credit cards, and then I went a little too crazy with credit card hacking and we backed it back off. And now I'm starting to tiptoe back into credit card hacking. So this is a perfect example of where you can avoid the echo chamber by talking to people about the other side of the coin. Because maybe you are no debt, 100% debt-free, you don't ever want to have debt. But let's have a conversation about how debt can be useful. Because there are two sides to every coin, so make sure you're avoiding the echo chamber with your finances, because sitting in an echo chamber will drive you nuts. You'll eventually feel like you're not going anywhere and your head is just spinning. Trying out new ideas allows us to open up our opportunities to new thoughts and challenges. Coast FI was one of these new ideas for my wife and I. We had a lot of struggle around getting the gears moving in the right direction towards traditional FIRE. And then we heard about Coast FI, and it allowed us to get moving in a new and better direction for us. We were able to challenge that massive number that you need for FIRE and at least get going in the right direction thanks to Coast FI. Try new ideas and then see how they can fit into your finances, because remember, it's personal. It's completely up to you how you handle your money, and every situation is different. So every single set of circumstances or advice is going to be different. But dip your toes into new areas, see how it could work for you, and avoid that echo chamber. But speaking of dipping our toes in, let's talk about the next money talking point, which is, how can you dip your toes into talking about money? Well, start a simple conversation based on this episode, or start a simple conversation around someone else's money situation online. A podcast that comes to mind is Fire Takes. I've had Gwen and Tim on the show, and their podcast, Fire Takes, takes situations they read about on Reddit, and they just discuss them. That's kind of fun. Talk about with your friends when you're playing video games, or when you're out at lunch, or things like that. Find some situation and break it down, like credit card hacking or avoiding debt or things like that. See how it goes. If your friends and family are rude about it, then you know your answer about sharing your own financial situation. You may want to avoid it there and find other people to talk about money with. Because you don't have to talk about your own situation in order to have good, healthy money talks. You can talk about others' situations and still take good principles and ideas away from the conversation that you can apply to your own situation. So make sure you're dipping your toes in, having small, little, easy conversations around money or easy money talks, and then you can prepare yourself for future situations that you may find yourself in. Maybe you don't find yourself with a pet or a child right now, but that's a financial situation you may have to deal with in the future. Ask your friends or family who are in that situation right now. I did this with one of my friends when he had two dogs and we were looking at getting a dog. I was saying, how much do you spend on dog food a month? Just to give an estimate. And that was super helpful for my wife and I to figure out a good monthly budget amount for our puppy that we have now. You can learn from other situations that you may end up in. So it's a great idea to start Money Talks, dip into those slowly, and get them going now. Start small. Same thing as the idea from a couple episodes ago with Eric Brotman, where we talked about starting small with investing. Same goes when it comes to talking about money. You can't go from 0 to 100% talking about money. Try going from 0 to 1% to 2%. Wade into it one step at a time. Keep it simple and keep it easy. But the next money talking point is, who can you teach about money to help you learn it twice? This was an idea that Cody shared that I really latched onto, because teaching people about money has helped me solidify my views and my opinions and my thoughts and all that I know about money, because I'm sitting here teaching it to all of you, my fellow money buddies. So who can you teach? You can teach friends, family, fellow money buddies in this community or in other communities. Everybody needs to know about money because it impacts every single area of our lives. And I have a podcast episode coming up in a couple weeks where we talk about all of those different areas that it can touch and how we're not taught about it. That's coming up soon, so make sure to subscribe. Use that episode to talk to your friends and family about all the different areas that money can touch, because we all need to know about it. There's a lot of value in teaching money. And like I was telling Cody, I get to go and do the research on some of these topics and bring it on here to present to you. And that helps me understand it. And I put even more effort into my research and learning, so I make sure I know what I'm talking about. And then I get to rehash it and learn it again when I'm talking about it with others. It's fantastic. It's so much fun to present these topics to you at libraries, things like that. You can start with this episode. Go teach someone about how it's important to talk about money, and you'll find it's going to stick a whole lot better for you since you've taught it to someone else. Or take any one of my episodes and go teach about that topic to your family, friends, or a fellow money buddy. But that does it for the money talking points for this episode. Let's wrap it up with a huge thank you to Cody for coming on this episode. Cody shared a ton of great information, and he shares a lot online, so be sure to follow him and check out his resources. That does it for this great episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I know that I did. We talked about a whole bunch of things today, like staying out of echo chambers, beginning to start online groups, communities, learning how to engage in online groups, and learning how to handle uncomfortable financial situations. There's certainly something for everybody in this episode when it comes to talking and learning about money together. You know what I like to say? We all do better with money when we're talking about it together. So be sure to go out and have a money talk about this episode. But thank you for listening to today's episode. The best way to stay up to date and connected with all things Money Talk is to subscribe to the podcast and sign up for my email list. Head over to moneytalkwithskylarfleming.com and submit your name and email right there on the homepage. You can also use the contact page on my website to send me any questions. And if you're looking to get started with budgeting, I've partnered with My Budget Coach, a platform that connects your budget directly to your coach. And I'd love to work with you over there and help you with your budgeting. The link, of course, is in the show notes. And remember, the best way to learn from today's episode is to go and have a money talk about today's topic with a fellow money buddy. But thank you for listening to this week's episode of Money Talk. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.